Broadcasting live from the KSHP studios in the heart of Las Vegas, Nevada.
It's time to get on the right side of sports betting. It's time for the Odds Couple.
Welcome to the Odds Couple on the world famous Vegas Video Network, simulcast live on KSHP AM 1400 right here in beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is Scott Pritchard. I'm a professional sports bettor handicapper featured on VegasInsider.com. I am also the founder of PritchardsPicks.com, joined as always my good friend, GM at KSHP and sports enthusiast, Brett Grant. Happy Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. I'm mourning my Tigers today. Our point guard has announced he's going to the NBA draft, along with everybody else who's played college basketball, Scott. They're all going to the NBA. There's nobody left.
I like that. I mean, right out of high school, right out of college, yeah. Right into the big dance, to playing professional basketball.
Well, Missouri seems to skip the big dance. They show up for about 40 minutes and they go home.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
Doesn't matter what seed they are. We show up and we go home 40 minutes later.
Let's get started with what say you? Los Angeles Angels. A year ago, they picked up Albert Pujols to a 10-year big fat contract. Did not even make the playoffs a year ago. This year, during the offseason, they picked up Josh Hamilton, the star player for the Texas Rangers, signed him to a $125 million contract. Hamilton started out 1 for 20, 10 strikeouts, finally came around a little bit on Sunday, 3 for 4, losing effort against his former team, the Rangers. But the fact of the matter is, the Angels, 7 games played, 2 wins, 5 losses. I'm asking you, Brett, do you now start to take this team, or is this team simply a fake? What say you?
I don't think I start to take them yet. I think I will eventually start to take them, but I think they've got some issues that they've got to deal with. Number one, you had Jared Weaver, obviously, a couple days ago go down. He's on the shelf now for 4 to 6 weeks. You had Eric Ibar go out yesterday, leave the game early with what looked like to be a heel or ankle injury as he stepped on first base. So now you got your shortstop out. Pujols is slumping to start the season. Hamilton hasn't been swinging the bat very well. And you've got some teams that are established already, and the A's yesterday beat them 9-5 in what was a very entertaining offensive game. And that's the other thing with the Angels is I don't necessarily see now with Weaver being out, who's going to be their stopgap pitcher? Who is their bona fide number one starter? Because C.J. Wilson was rocked around yesterday. I don't know who that guy is. Is it Joe Blanton today? I don't think so.
Yeah, I don't either. I'm not a big Joe Blanton fan, but I mean, C.J. Wilson came over last year, right, from the Texas Rangers and was average at best. But again, first time out early on here in the season, has not looked well. I look at this Angels team. I love their manager, Mike Socha. I also like they're going to hit the ball.
Right.
I mean, that lineup, top to bottom,
they're going to score.
I don't think anyone can compete. The pitching is a concern, especially on the back end. Their bullpen last year really, really had some problems, and I'm not sold on their pitching, whether it's starting pitching once you get past Weaver, who's now gone for 4 to 6 weeks. But your thoughts on the bullpen for the Angels?
Well, I mean, you saw it last night. I mean, C.J. Wilson came out of the game. It's 5-4, 5-5, and boom, they immediately give up 4 runs and lose 9-5. After being down 4-0, I believe it was, early in the game, they came back and took the lead 5-4. And Wilson was shaky in the first inning or two, settled down. And then he comes out of the game, and boom, the fireworks start again with the bullpen. There's some holes in that regard. And if they're going to have to score 8-9 runs every game to win to offset the weaknesses in their bullpen or their starting pitching or both, that's going to be a recipe for disaster. You're going to have to get some obviously quality innings somewhere, either on the front end or the back end. And right now they're not getting it anywhere.
When I bet baseball, I love teams that have very good pitching, and I love teams that play great sound defense. I'm not convinced that the Angels do either of those.
No, I'm not either. I mean, there's some parts I really like. I mean, Josh Hamilton made a wonderful catch yesterday in right field. You got Burgess in center who can fly. You got Trout in left. And that's a very fast outfield that they have in Anaheim. And then Pujols is a Gold Glove winner. Trumbo's a decent guy you can put in his spot. Obviously, Ibar. I really like Howie Kendrick. I think he's a very good second baseman and a nice power guy there. Iannetta's a solid catcher. I don't think they're a bad defensive team in that regard. I just think pitching-wise, it doesn't matter how good your defense is. If I just look over my shoulder and watch the ball sail over the fence, it doesn't matter how good my defense is. It doesn't matter then.
Mike Trout, great job a year ago, the rookie of the year in the American League. I guess my question is, he got a bit happy. I mean, he's somewhat of a fat cat today. He came into spring training a few pounds overweight. Far be it for me to call someone out by eating a little bit too much. But I'm a little surprised that he did not come back as sharp as he was a year ago. Are you surprised by this?
Well, when you get on the banquet circuit, you tend to eat too much and not work as hard and maybe rest on your laurels a little bit. I wouldn't panic yet. We're only 7 games into a 162-game marathon. He did have a triple yesterday, and he looked pretty fast to me running around the bases. I might have stopped for oxygen about the second base bag. So he looked pretty good in that spot. But, you know, obviously when you have key parts of your lineup that aren't hitting, you're able to pitch around guys. And with Trout at the front not hitting, Pujols in the 3 spot not hitting, Hamilton in the 4 spot not hitting, Trumbo's been okay. You can go around those guys in spots. And they left a lot of guys on base last night. They had the bases loaded a couple of different times last night and didn't score early in the game. They did finally punch through in the 4th inning, I want to say. And we did give you the over in that game yesterday. It went flying over the total
right on
as well. And I think they're an over team right now. I don't think their pitching's very good. I think their hitting's fine. So right now I think you ride the wave of playing them over the total.
Yeah, it's a good recipe for playing the over simply because they can hit 1 through 9, and their starting pitching, questionable, bullpen, average on their best day. So again, it lends itself to playing the over. Let's take a look at today's matchup with the Angels, again hosting the A's. The Angels are a small favorite coming off a loss. Last night, Joe Blanton takes the mound today for the Angels, and 0-1 going into today's game with a ERA of a big fat 7.20.
That's big. That's a big number.
That's not going to win many games, is
well,
it?
Well, you know, it's true. It's kind of. I was watching the Brewers last night, and they keep bringing John Axford back out on the mound, and it's like he gets hammered every time he goes out there. Every time I see Joe Blanton, it's the same thing. It's like I'm just waiting for the explosion. It's going to happen. You just don't know when exactly it's going to happen. And on the other side, the A's are throwing a lefty. So now Mike Socia has Josh Hamilton, who cannot hit left-handed pitching early in the year. What do they do with him? If it's me, it's a great time for Josh to have a day off and maybe bring him off the bench, put Trumbo in the outfield, move Trout around, move the outfield around, and give him a day off. Just let him chill out for one day. They've played 7 games. He's not hitting lefties. It's a good time to do that.
It would make sense. I doubt that it's going to happen, and I'll ask
or
you.
Or move him down at least one spot.
Now, that would make more sense, but again, per the fact he just signed a big fat contract for $125 million and he's a star hitter, I don't think that's going to happen either. It makes way too much sense
exactly
to do that. I will say that something I look at from a handicapping standpoint more than the ERA, earned run average, is WHIP, walks plus hits per innings pitched. And the lefty for Oakland, I mean, you look at someone, if they're below 1, that's really, really good. Yeah, exactly. And anything over 1, you want to take a look at. For instance, Blanton, 1.6 as far as walks, hits per inning pitched. That's pretty high.
Very high. And, you know, a very good pitcher is probably 1.2, 1.15 in that range. And obviously these guys are only 1 start and now into their 2nd start of the season. So when you have a 0.71, obviously Malone had a terrific first outing. In that, and he went 7 innings and gave up, 1 or 2 runs in that spot. On the other side, yeah, when you're closer to 2, that means there's 2 guys an inning that are getting on base. That's what this means. There means there's per inning how many walks and how many hits. So in this first start, you have Blanton with 1.6. So just over 1.5 runners an inning are already on base.
Right.
That's a recipe for disaster.
Exactly right. Especially in the American League, where oftentimes they don't manufacture runs. The exception would be the Oakland A's, of course. But teams like the Angels, teams like the Blue Jays, they pretty much get 1, 2, 3 guys on base and wait for the 3-4-run home run.
Well, it's the American League station-to-station baseball. You know, we get them on. We don't, you know, the American League is National League is get them on, get them over, get them in. The American League is get them on and wait for the big guy to hit a home run. That's pretty much the difference in the game. That's the designated hitter versus the mentality of what might be a National League manager going in there. But the Angels certainly have the bats to be able to bring guys around. But again, as we talked about, this is an Oakland team that still is under the radar. They are the champs, and nobody talks about them. They're 6-2. All they do is go out and win. They play hard. They play for each other. They have fun. I don't know if you saw the end of the game last night. Belfort is pitching at the end of the game. They're up 9-5, and he gives up a base hit to Mark Trumbo, and he's cursing Mark Trumbo out from the mound. And Trumbo's going, all I did was get a hit, dude, relax.
Right, right.
And then afterwards, he walked a guy, and he's F-bombing himself on the mound. And they're just a weird animal. I mean, if you gave him some psychiatric drugs, I don't know what would happen to these guys. But they've got a couple of interesting characters on that A's team, and Belfort's one of them in the back end of that bullpen.
Well, they're a fun team to watch because, again, they've won six consecutive games. They're in first place in the American League West. Going into the season, everyone pretty much said, hey, it's going to be the Angels winning the American League West. It's obviously extremely early, but it's interesting to see how games are being played out early in the season. Texas, right there. Oakland, first place, six consecutive wins. The Atlanta Braves on a pretty good run in baseball. They have five consecutive wins, and as we've talked before, never bet on a streak to end. That is applicable in sports betting. Yesterday, my play, I mean, again, Friday on this show, easy winner. Monday, easy winner. Yesterday, going with the Mariners at home, small favorite against Houston, only to get rocked. But it doesn't matter if you win by one or lose by 10. A win is a win. A loss is a loss.
Right. Well, the Astros finally said we're sick of – I think what the Astros did last night was they got all their runs for the entire week last night.
Right. I would agree. Because going into that game, they had lost six consecutive games. Your play of the day yesterday got there. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, I played the over in the A's and Angels game yesterday, and as we were talking about, when the team's not pitching well, but the other teams both can swing the bat, and that was a good spot in that regard with regards to the total getting there. And I think, as we talk about it, I think the Angels right now, until their pitching staff can shut somebody down, they're an overplay almost every night.
I agree. And I'm sure the odds makers will, the odds, the number will reflect
right.
that. But the key is to see it before it happens.
Last night was 7.5 with the two starters last night. And it was 3-0 after the first inning, 4-0 in the second inning. You're thinking, well, you know, the Angels are going to score. And by the fourth inning, it was already over the total.
Yeah, more times than not, it's been double digits as far as runs scored involving the Angels, whether they're playing Oakland or Texas.
Usually in the American League, when you have an offense like that, you're looking at a total of 10.
Right.
Makes you think a little bit differently. But 7.5 is more of a – I mean, it's not quite a Justin Verlander versus David Price matchup or Felix Hernandez, but, a 7 or a 6.5 is ace versus ace. You know, Clayton Kershaw pitching against Matt Cain, we saw it on opening day, a 6 or a 6.5. And I'm thinking 7.5 with two guys that both struggled in spring training, both had bad first outings, neither guy is their ace. And we're getting a 7.5. That just made a lot of value to me.
Good teams win. Bad teams lose. We talked about a couple of teams on pretty good-sized winning streaks right now. Oakland, 6 consecutive wins. The Atlanta Braves in the National League, 5 consecutive wins. And now on the other side of the coin, bad teams lose. We talked about the Houston Astros, 6 consecutive losses before last night's win at Seattle. The Miami Marlins, 4 straight losses. I think we're going to see that periodically throughout the course of the season.
Well, the Braves have taken advantage of the Miami Marlins in the last couple of days. But, you know, the Braves are a team that went out and spent a lot of money. They went out and traded for one of the Uptons. They signed a big contract for one of the Uptons. And I can never get the two straight. But they're both performing very, very well. Hit back-to-back home runs the other day to beat the Cubs in the 9th inning. One of them already has, BJ already with 5, or Justin with 5 home runs already on the season. And they're a team with a very good pitching staff as well and plenty of offensive talent around them, and they're not afraid to go out and make moves. Now, Freddie Freeman's on the disabled list, which is a big loss for them early in the year, but I think they've got enough depth to be able to withstand that little injury going through because they do have a good pitching staff and they have plenty of other guys that can fill in and pick up the slack.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on KSHP AM 1400 Radio, Las Vegas, Nevada. We're live and worldwide thanks compliments of Vegas Video Network. My name is Scott Pritchard, Pritchard's Picks, joined, as always, by Brett Grant, co-host of Odds Couple. Now, we're talking about streaks, sports betting. Let's talk NBA basketball, and no team is streaking more than the New York Knicks. The Knickerbockers have won 13 consecutive games. What say you?
They've been terrific, and they clinched their first division championship since 1994 with their win yesterday and obviously getting ready for the playoffs. The interesting thing is if the playoffs started today, and this could change, but they would play the Boston Celtics in the opening round of the playoffs. Is that a good matchup? I don't know if it is for the Knicks. I mean, the Celtics are proven. They're veteran. They're grizzled. They're mean. They know how to win. They know how to conserve their energy here in April to get ready for the playoffs. And then here's the Knicks riding a nice wave right now, playing terrific basketball. I got to think that's probably the worst possible matchup for the Knicks is to play the Celtics in the opening round of the playoffs.
Well, think about that, okay? You've won 13 consecutive games, you win your division, and your reward is it's all matchups this time of year, especially come playoff time, and your reward is in the first round you don't get an easy cake game or series. You have to play the proven winners, the Boston Celtics. A lot of history. Doc Rivers, a very good coach. And if the Celtics are healthy, which I'm not convinced they will be, it could be a very competitive series. But this team, the Knicks, they've been hit with injuries, but they just keep on keeping on. It starts and stops with Carmelo Anthony.
Right.
Now, Amari Stoudemire, $100 million contract. This guy, in my opinion, has been a complete bust. Never been a big fan of this guy, even when he played for the Phoenix Suns. It's not a coincidence that the Knicks started off like a house on fire early. Stoudemire comes back, and there's a lot to be said. Can these two stars coexist? From a sports betting standpoint, I don't know. All I know is what the numbers show, and when Stoudemire's in the lineup, they do not win, and they certainly don't get you the money. So bet with the Knicks when Stoudemire is out. Bet against him when he's in.
Well, it'll be interesting in the playoffs where if his health situation's there, if he's going to be there all the time or not. The thing about the NBA is the only sport we talk about is the selfishness of the NBA. Can these two stars coexist? Can Kobe and Dwight Howard exist? Can Kobe and Shaq exist? Can now we're back in the day? Now it's can Carmelo and Stoudemire exist? Do we ever hear about who can exist with Tom Brady or Peyton Manning or whoever in baseball? Do we worry about stars versus? I mean, did anybody talk about Hamilton and Pujols being together in the same lineup, making a gazillion dollars each? It only happens in basketball. Why is that? I'm not sure where the culture is that's a big deal. Back in the day, it was the Michael Jordan rules, and everybody else was somewhat different, and we had a special set of rules for Michael, which he probably deserved, and there was rules for everybody else because they weren't named Michael Jordan. It's the NBA is a weird animal in that regard, and when you look at the Knicks versus the Celtics, if it happens in round one, you've got guys that can play together in Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett that have rings, that are aged, that are grizzled, that are mean, that'll do whatever it takes to win. I don't know that the Knicks have that mentality. And there could be, in my mind, a first-round upset going through if the Celtics get that matchup. I got to like the Celtics to pull out the upset a little bit.
Well, you'd get a good price with Boston. The Knicks would have the home court advantage. But again, I go with proven winners, and the Knicks are a very good regular season team. They kind of remind me of the Denver Nuggets in the Western Conference, a very good regular season team, but they haven't done squat in the postseason. So we'll see how it plays out. But, you know, you're talking about players, coaches, can they coexist? And I don't think it's just all about basketball, because in listening to you, Brett, talk about players in the NBA coexisting with one another, I'm reminded of about a year ago right now when the Angels were struggling. Pujols in particular, I believe, I mean, he had a terrible
horrible start.
April, and they fired the hitting coach, Stoudemire, I believe.
Right.
And so, I don't know. I mean, I kind of saw that. I mean, the guy was a proven hitting coach for a year, many, many moons, and then one bad 2-3-4 week window and they can the guy. So, I mean, you can't fire Pujols. You can't fire the entire team, so you fire the hitting coach. I saw that. I saw him as a scapegoat.
Yeah, it's like when you give up a 100-yard touchdown on a kickoff return, they fire the special teams coach. I didn't miss the tackle.
Right, exactly.
And I guess, you know, a lot of these guys are spoiled from the standpoint of, and spoiled might not be the best word, but they get into their habit, they get into their routine, they like the guys they like, and obviously with their big contract, that carries a lot of weight of getting the things and the players and the guys around them that they might want going through. And I do applaud the managers and the owners who say, no, we like these guys going through, we're going to adapt. I mean, look at Dave Duncan, who was one of the great pitching coaches of all time in Oakland and in St. Louis, and now he's retired, but he was a guy who worked with guys who were cast-offs, turn them into pitchers, or guys who are proven professional, great pitchers, and made them better. And you got to be able to have that ability where it's got to be a give and take where say, okay, Albert, what do you like? Okay, well, here's my philosophy. Let's try and mold these two philosophies together to make you a better hitter going into it. And maybe that those two things didn't mesh in Anaheim last year going through. And I can see that at times. And you do see personalities clash going into it. But football is the one sport where they say, no, that doesn't work so much in football. It's, you know, Look at Bill Belichick. As soon as he thinks you're done producing, he doesn't care who you are.
Right.
See ya. Deion Branch. Has Deion Branch done anything in his career other than in New England?
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
So he knew he was done. And he said, we're gone. You can go to Seattle all you want. Go take that big contract. We'll see what Wes Welker does in Denver next year with Peyton Manning. Yeah, he caught, 115, 116 passes last year. My guess is he'll be in the 80 to 90 catch range going into this year. He'll have a 20 to 25% drop in passes just by not being with Tom Brady.
Yeah, and I don't think that Bill Belichick and the Patriots cared all that much. If he stayed, great. If not, that's fine, too. They didn't waste any time picking up another player from the St. Louis Rams. But they, I mean, as good as Welker is, the guy has bad hands. I mean, he's dropped a lot of passes.
Important passes.
Well, in the Super Bowl 2 years ago, he dropped a pass that would have sealed, guaranteed, or solidified a victory for the Patriots against the Giants. Yeah. Now, he's a star player, good player, but again, man, I just hate seeing him drop so many passes. So we'll see what he does. I would expect he'll have a very good year in Denver with Peyton Manning.
I think he'll have a very good year. I just don't think he'll have quite the same numbers as he had with Tom Brady because of the familiarity with the two of them, knowing where they are. And I think not that Peyton Manning is not a wonderful quarterback. It's just I think that familiarity will be a little bit different. You develop that rapport over years and years, and it's very hard to pick up in just a few preseason games getting ready to go. It was interesting that they wouldn't sign – the Patriots wouldn't sign Wes Welker for $6 million. Denver did. And then the Patriots went out and signed Danny Amendola for $6 million.
Right.
Yeah. Okay.
So, you know, I want to back up
now,
for
the
a
only difference between those two guys is Amendola's younger than Wes Welker.
Right.
And has caught about 1,000 less passes.
Right.
Yeah. So.
Now, I look at the – you were talking about coaches and players and can they coexist, and you mentioned Dave Duncan, pitching coach. And if I'm going on memory, but isn't that the guy who played for the Houston Astros way back when as a pitcher? Yeah. And I look at this, and oftentimes the best coaches were not star players. I think in terms of Bart Starr, who was a great quarterback for the Green Bay Packers in the 60s, a bad, bad coach. I could give you a lot of examples where – great players are not great coaches, and I think that's because the really good coaches, more times than not, were marginal or average players, but they were fundamentally sound. So it's one of those adages in real life, those who can't teach.
Exactly. That's why you're teaching handicapping.
Exactly
you
right.
You can't pick a game, right? You know, and there's other guys that they might be great college coaches, and it doesn't translate to the professional game, whether it's in basketball or football. Steve Spurrier is a good example. Even Pete Carroll, his first trip to the NFL wasn't so good. Rick Pitino's trip into New York to coach in the NBA wasn't so good, and they come back. Now Pete Carroll's doing very well this second time around in Seattle, obviously with what he's doing. So I think there's a big learning curve. I mean, Bill Belichick's first stint was coaching the Cleveland Browns. How'd that go? Not so well.
Not well.
But there hasn't been any good coaches in Cleveland. So I think we can give him a pass in that regard. I think it's a combination of both. Yeah, the guys that are very, very good players, like a Mike Singletary, his first coaching job in San Francisco, I would call him average to above average. Not great, but not horrible. There's been plenty of horrible coaches. I don't think Singletary was a horrible coach. And also the mentality has changed. If you're a guy like Mike Singletary, who's very intense, very demanding, wants more out of his players, that might have worked 20 years ago. It's not today's generation. These guys are coddled a lot more. They're used to getting their way a lot more. Everybody's been patting them on the back, pushing them through, telling them how wonderful they are. And now you're somebody who's saying, what? I can't do that. And I think the NBA is more of that than football is. But it's a different mentality today. It's a lot more about me. It's Twitter. It's getting out there and your social networking and your own personal brand. That's today's professional sports world. It's a lot different. I mean, Mike Ditka coaching today. How about Bear Bryant coaching today?
Or Vince Lombardi.
How long would those guys have lasted?
Right. Because, again, it's a different world. And I want to expand on that because if you look at in the past, if you heard of a coach being a player's coach, chances are they were a losing organization because the inmates were running the asylum.
Right.
The players were running the system. Today, I still respect the coaches who are not players' coaches, but especially in the NBA, you almost have to be. I'll give it, but there are still so many examples where that does not work. For instance, Paul Westphal, legendary player, great coach for the Sacramento Kings. DeMarcus Cousins, that crazy guy from Kentucky, playing for the Sacramento Kings. Right. Technicals, he's a man-child, a very immature, screaming, yelling, getting into it with Sean Elliott, a broadcaster being suspended. So he went on record as getting Paul Westphal fired to bring in his right-hand man, assistant coach Keith Smart. And now they're having problems. Now they're having issues. Right. So, again, history has a way of repeating itself. And there's a fine line. I mean, my favorite coach, hands down, NBA basketball, is Greg Popovich. I mean, what he says goes. The players fight hard for the guy, and his system is second to none.
Well, I think you're right, and I agree with you. And I think what makes him so good is because of the fact that he listens to the players. He knows what they need. If somebody's, he could tell they're tired, he's going to give them a break. But there's a communication back and forth saying, okay, hey, Dunk, guess what? You played 15 games in a row. I know you're how old you are now. You're in your upper 30s. You're going to sit down next game or so. Just take a break. Don't worry about it. So they know that back and forth. And the players expect it because they know it's been going on for a while. So there's that very good communication between the players and the coach. The coach has a plan. The players buy into the plan. And he's got a great rotation. He runs the deepest bench. They got a roster. They utilize all their assets on the roster. They're not relying only on one or two guys. And that is of all the NBA squads out there. That is the most team of all of them. They don't rely on any one guy. If Parker's down or Ginobili's down, we have other guys who can pick up the pieces. Here comes Danny Green. Here's Tim Duncan. If Duncan or Green are down, guess what? Here comes Parker. Here comes Ginobili. They got plenty of guys to shuffle in and out and move into. I mean, look at they had what? Blair, the kid from Pittsburgh, who was a great college player. He barely gets off the bench half the time, but when he comes in, very effective, very good player. I thought he'd be a superstar in the NBA, but he's coming off the bench. He seems to be happy with that role, and it works for them.
In the NBA, there is one coach that a few short years ago I did not think he would do very well because he was a media darling, and he is today still a player's coach. I stand corrected because the guy has won. Of course, he had talent. Doc Rivers had zero coaching experience in the NBA, but yet he led the Boston Celtics to the NBA title. He is a very good coach, and he would be billed as a player's coach.
Well, I think the other thing with Doc Rivers is he was an exceptional player, and he knows what it takes to be a player, and I think the players respect somebody who was a player. And now I think the generation is he's a little bit more removed. He's not just recently out of the NBA and suddenly he's coaching like Keith Smart would be, who's a lot younger than Doc Rivers. Now you look at Doc and you say, okay, Doc was he was an all-star. He was a great player. He commands respect because he knows what it took to get there. He was a guy who took teams, you know, was a leader of a team. Now he's just moved into a different role. So I think he brings in a lot of respect. There's two different ways to do it. I mean, you look at Eric Spoelstra in Miami. It took him probably a good year before he got the respect of the players because everybody thought he was Pat Riley's guy. He was his lackey. He didn't get a lot of respect, right? He was always kind of worried over his shoulder, making sure LeBron's okay. Are you okay, big guy? Got to make sure. And now he's got the respect because he won the title. You win a championship, that ring means a lot.
Well, and again, the fact that he was a good player, he can relate to today's NBA player. Doc Rivers was a very good player for the Atlanta Hawks, played with Dominique Wilkins. In today's world, I look at another coach with limited coaching experience in the NBA, but he's done a fantastic job, very likable, very disciplined, and he is a player's coach. The players love this guy. I'm talking about Mark Jackson for Golden State, the Warriors.
Mark said he's a high-energy guy. I mean, he's a New York guy, and he goes out, he played great. Another guy like Doc Rivers, who was a very successful player, and he played in a top media market. So he knew what it took in New York to satisfy the fans, the media, the expectations of the Big Apple, even though they never got the title, and they had some very, very good teams. Unfortunately, they were against the Bulls and going against Michael Jordan in that stretch, and Patrick Ewing and Michael Jordan, and those are some great battles going through, and a lot of these guys might remember that. But again, another guy who was a very good guard, who Seth Curry he could take under his wing and says, here's what it takes to get the job done. You can be the guy, but here's what you need to do. And I think he commands that kind of respect.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on Vegas Video Network and KSHP AM 1400 Radio right here in Las Vegas, Nevada. My name is Scott Pritchard, founder of PritchardsPicks.com. I'm joined by Brett Grant, the GM of KSHP. We're broadcasting live each and every Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 noon Las Vegas time. We're going to slide right on in, bring in the wheel. No, we are not playing Wheel of Fortune. This is serious business. We're talking about spin to win. Now, from a sports betting standpoint, it's important to bet with your head, not your heart. And the reason we have this segment on the show is to promote that you want to be an independent, progressive thinker. Leave your check your emotions, check your ego at the door. Again, play with your head, not your heart. When it comes to tonight's game, we're a big game. Denver, Mile High City, high altitude, thin air. The Denver Nuggets are hosting the San Antonio Spurs. Playoff implications for this contest. The line is 3.5. The Denver Nuggets are 3.5-point favorites against the Spurs. I'm going to spin to win. Whatever team it lands on, I am forced to argue why that's a good bet. Brett automatically will present the other side. It's important to understand both sides before you step up to the bet window. Spurs taking on the Nuggets. What do I have here? Nuggets. Denver Nuggets at home taking on the San Antonio Spurs. 3.5 points could be cheap simply because have these odds makers not been paying attention? The Denver Nuggets have gone 19-2 in their last 21 games. They are going for their 21st consecutive home win. Yes, they have a couple of, well, they have their star forward that is out, and then Ty Lawson may or may not play, so you might want to check this before you step up to the bet window. They are their top two scorers, but they've been winning without them. Wilson Chandler has stepped in and has done a fantastic job. I love the Nuggets simply because they're deep, they're talented, they attack the paint. Forget their free throw percentage, they get to the free throw line. Especially at home. Again, just they're relentless. They love to run and gun. I don't think that's a good recipe for postseason basketball, but regular season, it's done them extremely well. Again, going for their 21st consecutive home win. They've only lost 3 home games the entire season. So obviously, you have to lean on the Nuggets. Chances are they're going to win. The only concern is how many do they win by, and 3.5 is cheap. Ring up the ringer. See the cashier.
Oh, Beulah sounds ill today.
Well, I was going to say, apparently this does not agree with me.
You got to have the magic touch. You got to be a little gentle with her.
There you go. See, story of my life.
She doesn't like getting beaten.
Now you tell me.
Exactly. Well, here's the thing. It's all about matchups, right? And I realize that the Spurs are going in without Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili tonight, and Boris Diaw probably won't play as well. So there's 3 very key guys not in the lineup. And Tim Duncan admits the fact that they're not playing in a very good rhythm right now. But there are teams that you beat with your eyes closed, and this is one of those teams in the San Antonio Spurs taking care of the Denver Nuggets. They've beaten them 9 of the last 12 times they played. They're like their little redheaded stepchild. They just beat them every time they see them going through. And you're going to give me points? Okay, in that regard. And the Spurs, obviously, they're a team that has proven time and time again when they're shorthanded, they might be at their best because they tighten up, the troops get focused even more, and they get great contributions from places they're not expecting on their roster going through. And anytime you give me one of the best teams in the league plus points, I think that's tremendous value. This is the one team that travels just as well as they play at home. The Spurs, obviously, looking to stay ahead of Oklahoma City for that number one spot overall. And obviously, if Lawson's not going to play or not 100%, that's a huge loss or at least a huge deficit that the Denver Nuggets are going to have to recover from. So I think San Antonio getting 3.5 to 4 points is a very nice value spot tonight.
San Antonio Spurs have lost 4 consecutive road games, but your point's well taken, Brett. They, I believe, 23-14, if I'm not mistaken, on the road. And Popovich says you have to be a good road team if you're going to win an NBA championship. I will say that Tony Parker, I checked this before I came to the studio today. Manu, we know, is out. Boris Diaw is out. Steven Jackson, ankle, out for tonight's game. But Tony Parker is probable.
Okay.
Now, Lawson may or may not play. Of course, their star forward is gone for the season. So it'll be interesting to see. Your point's well taken. You talk about the Spurs and the fact that they've had success against the Nuggets. I always look at ATS against the spread, and the San Antonio Spurs against the Nuggets, 19-7 against the number in their last 26 games. So that bodes well for you Spurs fans.
Well, when you're getting the points. I mean, you got one side that dominates the series, and now you're getting points where I'm sure most of those games the Spurs were laying points, and now they're in a situation. Obviously, I understand why they're in that situation because of the injuries, and because Denver's a very good team at home. But by the same token, we know the Spurs are a very good road team. If Parker's back and healthy, and Lawson is not there or not healthy, you got to favor San Antonio in that particular matchup. And there's always Tim Duncan. He just scores and scores and scores.
And block shots and rebounds the ball extremely well as well. Now, the Denver Nuggets are dialed in as the number 3 seed, okay? But they could be anywhere from 3 to 5 with Memphis. Clippers are dialed in at number 4 because they won their division. So it's going to be 3 and 5 between the Grizzlies and the Nuggets. So a lot at stake. 4, maybe 5 games left. The Spurs need this game because right now they do have the number 1 seed in the Western Conference. I think for them to get out of the West, they need the number 1 seed. Even though last year they had it, they won 18 consecutive games. They won the first 10 games in the playoffs, being up 2-0 against Oklahoma City in the Western Conference Finals before losing 4 consecutive times. The Thunder, they do not have James Harden. They did pick up Kevin Martin, but he's no James Harden. So I think this Thunder team, they did what they had to do last night, and you like them. You like them on the road against the Jazz, getting or actually laying 3, 3.5, right, a short number. They won, covered the game easily. So they did what they had to do. So the Spurs now need to do what they have to do, which is going on the road and winning in Denver. The difference is they're a 3.5-point dog as opposed to the Thunder being a 3.5-point favorite.
Well, they're playing a better team because Utah is not nearly as good as Denver is in that spot. Utah didn't play very well last night, but Russell Westbrook did. We spent some time yesterday talking about his role on this team, and he was very good last night, 25 points. Kevin Durant with 21 and 12 rebounds, and he was Kevin Durant as he normally is in that particular spot. The interesting thing is you look at the bottom of this Western Conference playoff race. Now, the Lakers have a half-game lead right now. The Jazz have 3 games left to play. The Lakers have 4 games left to play, and the Lakers have Portland, tonight. They also play San Antonio, Houston, and Golden State. They've got 4 very tough games where the Utah Jazz play Minnesota twice, and then they play Memphis to finish up their season. So I'm still not convinced, even though the Lakers are half game ahead, that they're going to be in that playoff spot. It might very well still be the Jazz based on the remaining schedule coming in. And then you mentioned James Harden. Well, he's in Houston. Wouldn't it be interesting if Houston matched up with Oklahoma City in the opening round of the playoffs? It's a possibility if Golden State doesn't slide up or down a spot.
You mentioned James Harden and Houston. He's had a fantastic season for the Rockets, and the Rockets are in the playoffs. You look at this team, and just recently, I mean, it's 98-98, Rockets at home against the Phoenix Suns, 6 seconds to go in the game. James Harden is going to dribble out the clock, take the last shot. He fires up a long shot at the buzzer. It rolls around the rim, and Jermaine O'Neal lives in Las Vegas, great guy, great player.
Had a break.
Goaltending.
Had a break.
Goaltending. So instead of going overtime, they lost because his hand went through the net and touched the rim, which had, believe it or not, it had no bearing on the shot not being good, but rules are rules, and the Suns lost the game. But what a tough way to lose.
That is. Teams create all kinds of inventive ways to lose games. There's another one. Hadn't seen that one yet.
Right.
Losing on a goaltending.
On the last play of the game.
On the last play of the game.
You're listening to The Odds Couple on Vegas Video Network and KSHP AM 1400 Radio. My name is Scott Pritchard, PritchardsPicks.com, alongside Brett Grant, the GM here at KSHP. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
This is David Ivey from Pub Crawl. It's funny because this is David from... You should just leave it on. Hi, I'm David Ivey from Pub Crawl, and you're watching the Vegas Video Network. And scene.
Vegas Video Network and KSHP AM 1400 Radio. My name is Scott Pritchard, PritchardsPicks.com, alongside Brett Grant, GM, right here at KSHP. Keep those questions coming. 702-221-7283. Live chat questions on Vegas Video Network. We would love for you to continue to be a part of the show. Email us at oddscouple@vegasvideonetwork.com. That's oddscouple@vegasvideonetwork.com. Also, reach out to us on our site, Vegas Video Network, and we'd love to have your voice on our show simply through web-based voicemail on the right-hand side. Red bar, click there. Middle of the page, green bar, start recording. Live chat questions, we'll field those as well. If you do miss us live, no worries. You can simply reach out to us on YouTube, Vegas Video Network, iTunes, and Roku. This is the part of the show. I love this part of the show. We get to tap into what frustrates you when it comes to sports betting or sports in general. What say you? Actually, let's call it, are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me? We forgot the segment.
When by we, you mean me.
Oh, yeah. Well, hey, we're together. Well, I'll go first today. So are you kidding me? It's now, it's late. It's mid-April. The NCAA basketball tournament is finished. And now Moses arrives in America. And we have the mass exodus of college basketball players declaring themselves eligible for the NBA draft. Are you kidding me? Enough of this. One and done. Or I think I might get drafted. I'm going to the NBA immediately. Now, the NBA is the most restrictive draft of all the drafts. They only have two rounds. There's only 65 guys that can get drafted, approximately, as they go through. But yet there's hundreds of guys that are putting their names in the hat to go into the NBA draft. Doesn't matter how good they were in college, how good their teams were, what position they played. They all declare to go to the NBA draft, and if they don't get an agent, they can, oh, I'm going to come back and play for my college. But in the meantime, they're leaving their college coaches and teams and teammates all wondering, who's our point guard next year? Who's going to be our power forward? What happened to this guy? That guy's going too? Really? I mean, you see the announcements. You have, whether it's two guys so far from Indiana, a couple guys from Kentucky, a couple guys from Louisville, Michigan's announcing like crazy. Guys from bad programs all leaving all over the place. And I mentioned my Missouri Tigers to start it off with. Their point guard, Phil Preston, who had a terrible year, horrible year for Missouri, is on his way declaring himself eligible for the NBA draft. So I think a lot of these guys are either prematurely going and they need the seasoning and they should stay in school a little longer. Other guys see the potential grab for cash and they're going to run out and find out how good they might be against the other competition. I don't begrudge them for doing it. I just propose, don't come to college in the first place. I want to root for my college team. I want to see my guys for 4 years in college, perform well for the university, get their education, then move on to the next level. If you're not interested in that, don't even bother coming. So NBA, change your rule. Let the guys come right out of high school. I don't care. But in the meantime, are you kidding me? With all these guys leaving early for the NBA.
You think that's part of the reason as to why we see so many young players in the NBA that are not fundamentally sound? I mean, Amari Stoudemire for the Knicks went on record as saying, listen, I mean, it took some courage to say it, but a lot of us were upset when he said, listen, no one has ever taught me how to play defense.
Right. Perfect. Now, there are transcendent guys. There's Kobe Bryant and LeBron James who did not go to college, who are obviously superstars in the NBA. What's wrong with that? Let those guys go. And for every Kobe, there's going to be a guy that didn't make it. Okay, that's part of that. That's the risk. You're 18 years old. Make that choice whether you're going to go to college or not go to college. But you know what? I want more Tim Duncans. I want somebody who spent 4 years in college. I want more Tyler Hansbroughs. Not that Hansbrough is a superstar in the NBA, but I loved watching him play for 4 years. I liked hating J.J. Redick at Duke for 4 years. I enjoyed that. That's what made college basketball so fun. That's what I want to see. Stick around in college or don't come. One or the other.
Are you kidding me?
Are you kidding me?
I'm going to talk some baseball. Carlos Carrasco, pitcher, taking on the Yankees last night. Now, Carlos Carrasco is a guy who just got done serving a 6-game suspension, had not played baseball since 2011. Why? Because he had threw at the head of a player. So now he just finished serving a 6-game suspension, and then Robinson Cano jacked out a 2-run home run. The next batter, Youkilis, steps into the batter's box. So what does Carlos do? He throws right and hits him in the shoulder.
Well, that's the old adage in college, in Major League Baseball. You got to make the next guy pay. Now,
well, you do, but
you just
based
don't
on
hit
the
him
history,
in his head.
Right? You don't throw up, you don't throw high, and then based on the fact there was a history there. Now, after the game, he said, "I slipped. Sorry." It's like, well, what would you expect
him
to say?
Just tell the truth. No,
own
you
it.
Didn't.
Own it.
Own it. You know what? It's like Cole Hamels that one year. He said, "Yeah, I threw at Harper on purpose." And he probably shouldn't have said that, but I have more respect for Cole Hamels saying the kid was digging in. He's 19. Welcome to the big leagues. I'm throwing at you. That's what Major League Baseball is all about in that regard. It's a mano-a-mano battle. Now, if you want to hit somebody and hit them on purpose, as Tony La Russa always said, he goes, "Hey, I understand it's part of the game. Just don't throw at somebody's head."
Right, exactly.
You want to hit Euclid in the back, in the rump, in the leg, more power to you. Just don't throw it up where you could end a guy's career. And that's the danger with guys, especially them throwing 95, 90-plus miles an hour. Almost everybody in the league throws that hard now. So if you want to hit somebody, hit them where you're not going to potentially end their career going through. But I think it's part of the game in general is if you give up a home run, you at least brush the next guy back or let them know your frustration. That goes back for generations. But also, there's too many pitchers today that don't pitch inside. They're afraid to pitch inside because they're afraid they're, number one, they're going to hit somebody, or they're going to get into a brawl when they do hit the wrong guy, and out comes somebody with a bat in his hand for a fight going through, and you'll have a big melee, which you don't want to have. But pitchers have got to be willing to go on the inside part of the plate. And if you don't, and you let a hitter like Robinson Cano get comfortable in the batter's box, guess what? A fan's got a souvenir.
Well, I respect the fact, it's been going on forever, and I respect the fact that pitchers have their teammates' backs, okay? Here's the concern. Roy Halladay, spring training, threw out a player. A lot of people very upset with this because Strasburg accidentally hit someone in spring training, and Halladay went up and plunked someone else. A lot of people were upset, hey, it's spring training, but it's like, you know what? I respect what Roy Halladay did.
It
doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if it's spring training, World Series, you have your players back. Halladay is a guy I'd like to go to war with.
Well, if you have a pitcher who won't do that, then most of the guys won't want that guy on their team. So from a pitcher standpoint, they have to understand, and the vast majority of them do, if one of my guys gets taken out, my responsibility is I have to make sure that they know that we saw that, and I throw at the next guy. Whether it's their pitcher coming up or their big slugger coming up, nobody throws at the eight-hole shortstop. They throw at the big slugger or they throw at the opposing pitcher. Now, in the American League, if somebody hits somebody, the pitcher never has to step to the plate. So he could actually be he could probably be a little more brazen than he might be in the National League, because in the National League, he's got to face that pitcher. At some point, he'll be back up at the plate coming through. So in the American League, usually it's the big slugger that gets hit.
Based on how Roy Halladay has pitched early on in the season, maybe it wasn't intentional.
Good point.
Well, we'll see how it plays out for sure. You're listening to The Odds Couple on Vegas Video Network and KSHP AM 1400 Radio. Scott Pritchard alongside Brett Grant. And this is the part of the show where we put money into your pocket as Brett and I together put you on the right side.
Welcome back here with the right side today. I'm going to start it off this time, Scott. I'm going to stick to a team that's red hot right now, won three in a row, but they're really swinging the bats. We talked about them a little bit yesterday with regards to the Yankees. They've scored 11 runs yesterday, 14 runs yesterday, 11 runs the day before, 25 runs against an Indian team that if they don't have the right guy and Justin Masterson on the mound pitching, they're struggling right now. And I think with Ivan Nova pitching for the Yankees today, another game where I think there's going to be plenty of offense. So I'm going to take the Indians and Yankees game once again and go over the total in that game.
Red Rover, he loves the over. Brett's been on a streak. We talked about Friday, Anthony Padilla and I went 2-0 ATS against the spread. Monday, Brett and I went 2-0. Yesterday on Tuesday, I was a big fat loser. Brett, an easy winner once again. So, again, today he's on the over in the Indians game. I'm looking at an NBA game. The Detroit Pistons are on the road taking on the Cleveland Cavaliers. And the Detroit Pistons, I think, are a bad basketball team. They have a player tonight that is questionable, Calderon. He's questionable, not probable, not doubtful, but questionable. So at least check that out before you step up and make your bet. The Cavs are favored by 1.5 at home against the Pistons, but they have some injury concerns. Walton, Miles, and Gibson are all questionable for Cleveland. But people have oftentimes asked me, who is my favorite team? And my answer is whoever I have money on.
Right.
But if I break it down even more than that, more times than not, I have so much respect for my favorite team, which is HOME, the home team. NBA basketball, there's a reason why you have five or six teams only that have road winning records. And then in a short number like this, when it's just 1.5, you don't have to worry about the point spread. You basically have to just win the game. So my interest is the same as the Cavs. They're fighting in front of 20,000 fans, hopefully, if people actually go to the game. And then I have 8 against 5 in the last 2 minutes, meaning those refs, I'd like to think, are in my back pocket because, again, 20,000 fans did not pay to see the Cavs lose. And I realize there's not going to be 20,000 fans at the game tonight in Cleveland.
If you account the ushers and the popcorn guys, you might get close.
It's very possible. The other key is we used to have two female officials in NBA basketball. I like to always check and see who's officiating a game. We have one lady now, and I love ladies. I have so much respect for women, but I'm a professional sports bettor, so I'm always looking for any type edge advantage, and it's worked well the past few years. If I have a female that's an official, I almost always will be on that home team because 20,000 fans, ladies like to please. They do not like to disappoint. And that lends itself to what I say anyway, knowing that I have 8 against 5. The refs, they'll swallow the whistle instead of calling a foul. And it's advantageous to me as a sports bettor late in games.
Or they'll help the home team if they need the point. They'll blow the whistle, right?
Exactly.
And then call that close play. It's, you know, a lot of people, I think, from the amateur handicapping or sports bettor standpoint, which I consider myself to be of, I don't go out and when I'm looking at that, I never considered who the home plate umpire is going to be necessarily or who the referees are going to be in an NFL game or who the referees are going to be in an NBA game. So I ask you, where do I find out that information?
You can go to VegasInsider.com or DonBest.com. It's very, very important because there are trends. We know we follow players' trends, teams that play well against lefties, righties, day games, night games, grass, turf, indoors, outdoors. Same way with umpires. The strike zone is not, it's subjective. The strike zone is subjective. Some umpires are dead over umpires and some are dead under. And that information, while it's readily available to me, it's amazing when I talk to people like you who are sports enthusiasts but may not be a professional sports bettor. It's very, very important to know, and the information is there. So you can go to VegasInsider.com. You can go to DonBest.com, and they will announce that. I will not make a bet until I know who's in the starting lineup. Nothing irks me more than to bet a baseball game. Albert Pujols is not going to play today. Why? Did he tweak an ankle?
Does he have a scheduled day off? Yeah.
No, it's just rest. Right. Really? You need a day off? Really? You play 3 hours a day?
No, that's a good point. I think part of it, being a professional handicapper, is this is your job. This is what you do, where other people are at their accounting jobs or they're at their whatever jobs, and they only have a certain amount of time that they can dedicate to looking at a game before they make a wager with a game, where your job is to dissect the games, dissect the numbers, and go see night game versus day game, turf versus grass, umpire versus this. How much time do you spend analyzing each game in the day leading up to the with the card?
A lot of time. I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years, and I've gone on record as saying, Brett, that I've gone from the world's worst sports bettor to having won sports handicapping contests in Las Vegas. Now, you joked that, hey, I teach people how to make money sports betting now, and I joke that those who can't teach. But fact is, for 10 years in Las Vegas, all I did full-time, sports bet. I took 3 months off and traveled, and then I took my winnings and opened up multiple businesses because I'm a big believer in multiple streams of income.
Sure.
Now, having businesses from my gambling winnings is great, but I try to delegate and outsource as much as possible because I'm not at liberty to physically be in the field doing things because then I'm not able to be here with you. So it's nice when I'm in Laguna hanging on the beach knowing I have money coming in.
Sure.
But to answer your question, I tie up a lot of time. It's like anything else. I mean, it's not easy to do. It's a grind. But the harder I work, the luckier I am.
then you take the luck out of it. It's more of a skill, obviously, going through in that regard. But the difference with sports gamblers, professional sports gamblers, and somebody who has a regular 9-to-5 job is, if you go in, if I go into my regular 9-to-5 job and I do my work, I get a paycheck. Where you can go in and do your work and still not get a paycheck. In fact, you could give your money away on the other side of it.
Well, you have to have thick skin, no doubt about it. And that goes back to where you cannot ever bring emotion into the fact. I'm never emotionally attached to a game, never emotionally attached to a team. And I try to minimize how many games I actually watch, because my work has to do with finding the best number, finding value, and then going out proactively and betting it. Okay, so I've often said that every sports bettor will make more money betting sports by perfecting four key skills: patience, discipline, money management skills, and the ability to shop and recognize value. Now, of those four key skills, I really believe that money management is the most important skill. The idea is you never want to risk more than 2% of your bankroll on any one game. Having been here since 1993, having come here from Chicago, I've seen a lot of good handicappers go belly up and go broke, and it's more than anything else money management. I've been hurt in the past because of bad money management skills, so I think that is skill number one: bet with your head, not over it.
Well, I know a lot of people go with their, hey, one unit here, 5 units there, 10 units here. What's your philosophy on a game? Are you pretty much, and I don't want to know the amount, are you pretty much wagering the same amount on every game, or do you go with one unit here, 2 units here, if you really like a game more than another spot?
Ideally, I keep everything the same. Nickel plays, 550 to win 500, because that's what the sports books limit me to at the sports books. Now, if they would let me bet more than that, then I would. But if you're betting nickels on totals, which is what I prefer to do, but they'll let you bet 3,000 on a side, I'm still limited to only betting nickels because my expertise is in totals. So it doesn't, if I'm betting 3,000 on a side, it doesn't matter what I'm doing with totals. Now, what's interesting is if I bet the limit on a total, 550 to win 500, and they don't move the number, I take that personally and I'll pound it again. But 90% of the time they move it by a half point, point, even a point and a half on totals. So at the same time, you want to have some disparity. I mean, I'm not talking me specifically, but you can't just say 2% of your bankroll in any one play. If you bet up to 3, 4, 5% of your bankroll, you're still going to be okay. The idea is you never want to risk, you know, 20, 25% of your bankroll. And the reason is, on your best day, let's just take baseball out of the equation because it's strictly money lines, but betting college and pro football, college and pro basketball, if you are a very good advantage player, handicapper, on your you're going to win 60% of the time, 55-60% of the time, ATS against the spread. The break-even point is 52.4%. In terms of money management, please understand this. You never want to risk 25, 50, 75, or 100% of your bankroll on any one bet, simply because on your best day, there's a 40% chance you're going to lose. Now, good money management skills are good money management skills. The idea is, if you took your retirement, you would never risk all of it, knowing that there's a 40% chance you could lose.
Right.
So common sense. Again, bet with your head, not over it.
And there's a lot of people, obviously, that might not be playing baseball right now. They wait for football season to come through, and I know we're running low on time in today's show, but baseball is one of the sports that probably holds closest to form than any of the other sports. It's actually, I hate to say the word easier, but it's the one sport that seems like the professional handicappers prefer to play more of than they play football. But well, they know the public loves betting football.
Everybody bets football. And the problem with that is most people lose. Most unsuccessful sports bettors know just enough to get themselves into trouble. I like baseball because it's every single day. And instead of a 20-cent line, meaning minus 10 cents on either side, you can shop and find a 10-cent line. So, and if you shop, you don't have to pay any vig, any juice whatsoever. So I'm constantly looking for, it's critically important long-term. Short-term, it may not seem like much, but it's so, so important to get the best number. And then I'll take my chances. If I'm laying 15 cents on a game and it closes 30, I don't really much care what happens because I know long term, if I'm getting 15 cents the best of it, if I'm betting 11.50 to win 1,000 and everyone else is having to bet 1,300 to win 1,000, I just scalped $150 times 3 to 5 bets a day times 7 days a week times 365 days out of the year. Again, you're going to do okay for yourself.
Right. It's interesting because, I mean, the more people talk about it, and obviously the ability, the information is all over the place, where 20 years ago you couldn't get this kind of information we were talking about with regards to umpires and all that kind of stuff. With the internet now, you click a button and now I know who the umpires are going to be. And it used to be, oh, it's Harvey Wendelstedt today. You never knew that, right, before the end of the day, who was behind the plate in a given game.
The information is there, but people travel the path of least resistance, like water. At the end of the day, I mean, I can do my sports betting seminars and educate people. At the end of the day, they just want to know, Scotty P, who do you like in tonight's game? But I like to at least arm people with as much knowledge as humanly possible to give themselves a fighting chance. Brett Grant, great having you with us on the show again today. My name is Scott Pritchard. I'm the founder of PritchardsPicks.com. Check me out, VegasInsider.com. We're here Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 12 noon, Las Vegas time. For Brett Grant, I'm Scott Pritchard. This is The Odds Couple. Tune in tomorrow, 11 o'clock, Las Vegas.